My name is Colin Bootsveld. I work for a non-Thiel organization. I'm not a coach. I'm not a trainer. And I don't have any assignment to bring in Thiel into the organization. Yet, I think it's possible to do this on a daily basis. I would like to inspire you to do this as well. The main point that I would like to share with you today is to apply what you know first and then maybe explain afterwards. Apply and maybe explain. I listed some of the models that I tend to use, but I have learned to speak about them only in a very reluctant way, only when absolutely necessary, when it's appropriate. Let me give you some framework, and I would like to thank the Thiel Track organization for inviting me, because it got me to rewrite my own personal integral life story. I was on the creative writing workshop yesterday, and it's really interesting to rewrite your own story. Anyway, I studied at the University of Twente in the Netherlands about 30 years ago, and it was a university, it still is a university, that has teaches technical skills, but also social skills. One of my friends there became a philosopher and now teaches ethics. And every 3 months I was forced to in a way, not only to study technical subjects, but also something more social, something different. And in the teaching of cultural anthropology, the teacher said, there is not one truth. And I didn't get it. I knew what truth was, I could prove it. So that was like awakening, like, okay, some people say there's not one truth, but I didn't understand it. I think it's still a lesson very important for us here, as we are here today, because there is not one truth. Also, going Thiel is not necessarily one way of looking at things. Ken Wilber calls it line absolutism. That's thinking in an absolute truth. And I would really recommend to, and I'm very glad this is possible at IAC here, we have so many different viewpoints on reality. I think it's really important. In my working life, I have then been alternating between more technical jobs and times where I was more focused on personal development. And I came into a personal practice, a development practice, and Ole Gunnlaugsson said it very nicely yesterday, to experience reality before we conceptualize it. And that was so wonderful that I started talking about it. But by talking about it, I actually conveyed with my body that it didn't work. So what I was saying and what I was doing was not aligned. I now work for the Colruyt Group, a company in Belgium. It's a retailer. It's the biggest company, private company in Belgium, one of the most successful companies in Belgium. It's very well known. It is the lead supermarket player. And it has some very special characteristics. Of course, it sells food. Lowest value meme. But it's also a family-owned business. It has a lot of power, it has penetrated new markets, it really is constantly trying out things. It has very clear structures. It's very competitive. And personal growth is there in the company all the time. It's there for decades. We have a saying in the company, if you would like a plant to grow, don't pull on it, but give it water and light. So this is actually a reality in our organization that people go on personal development, workshops, trainings, whatever, to develop themselves. It's also a value-driven organization. So we already know what values are shared. If I look at Laloux's book, Appendix 4, I like that as an engineer. I like his appendix because I can tick the box. And he speaks about people go in and out the organization to decide how much time are they willing to spend on the organization. Well, in my job as an engineer, I tick a clock and they count the hours that I work. I'm asked to work a minimum of 35 hours, but if I choose to work 45 hours, which may happen, I get 10 hours extra that I can use later to get extra pay or extra leave. So I'm flexible there already. So let's dive a little bit into technology. Before you get the food that you buy in the supermarket, it needs to be cooled Cooling is really important. Without cooling, it is really very difficult to get fresh food to you. Not all of us live on a farm, even then. A cooling machine, just to give you a framework, extracts heat on one side and releases it on the other side, and it needs energy to run. I promise this is the only technical slide I'm going to show you. But you came here to see something about engineering, so here it is. So the point is that in this machine, there's something rotating. We call it a refrigerant. It's a chemical. The chemical industry has created it. It's very safe for humans, but it's very unsafe for climate change. It causes enormous climate change. 1 kilogram released to the atmosphere has the same impact as driving a small car around the planet. And we have 100, 200 kilograms in such a cooling installation in any supermarket. We lose 5% per year. That's the best number you can get. Generally, it's 10, 20%. So imagine that supermarket around the corner, it really is like many cars constantly driving 40,000 kilometers per year. So that's an impact. And in the Kinefin model from Dave Snowden, the machine is complicated. I am an engineer. I can take it apart and can put it back together and we'll have the same machine. It's complicated, but it can be done. But as soon as I add its surroundings, its interactions with its environment, the thing becomes complex. I have customers, I have the weather, I can heat the shop with the cooling machine. It becomes complex. This is just a list of possible ways to solve the global problem. So I'm moving from the local cooling machine to the system of the whole world. I'm telling you that the most important thing that mankind has to do is to handle the use of cooling refrigerants. 8.5% of what they say is necessary to limit climate change can be done by handling the refrigerants problem. Maybe you're aware of the Montreal Protocol and the Kigali Agreements. This is what it's all about. And I was very happy to show this slide to my CEO because of the top 10 measures covering 55% of what needs to be done, most of them are actually being done by our company. Because we have wind turbines onshore and offshore. Of course, we work on reducing food waste and many others. So that was really interesting on the systems level. The EU has also understood the implications of that and came up with a complicated but rather linear proposal to just reduce the amount of refrigerants available on the market. So from 2020, we cannot install the same cooling machine that we were doing 2 years ago. And from 2030, this machine cannot be used. And if you know that a cooling supermarket is there for 10, 15 years, I have to start now. In 2013, the first prototype was done by a colleague of mine. It contains propane as a refrigerant. Forget all the details, but it is 1,000 times better per kilogram in terms of climate change. And also, we're not using 140 kilo, we're using 14 kilo. That's 10 times less. And of course, this being a flammable refrigerant, safety is of the utmost importance. We have not lost a single kilogram since 2013. If I would lose a few kilograms, it wouldn't work. So this is like a 99.999% reduction in CO2 emissions. But the technicians did not feel safe. And I'm pointing at the word feeling. It was the feeling of the technicians, internal technicians, that it wasn't safe. They didn't feel safe. That's enough. If they don't feel safe, this is not the right solution. So what do we do? So in 2014, I got the assignment, and it looks like this. My management had a dream. We had a dream. Make something that is plug and play, easy to maintain, reusable. You know, don't throw it away at the end of its life cycle. Something that is ecological. And I started using Theory U. MIT Otto Scharmer was sharing his online course, and I got some colleagues to participate. And then we invited the technicians. We didn't say to the technicians, now I'm going to do a stakeholder interview. No, no way. We got them together, and we really learned to talk to each other and to learn what was important for them. And they told me, we need a cooling machine that is redundant. If something breaks down, we want to have time to repair it. Because if the cooling machine doesn't work, within an hour, the supermarket doesn't function anymore. And we get enormous pressure. And I told them, it cannot be done because that's too expensive. I had to watch the euros as well. And at the beginning, they were then sending emails around me to their management, Colin is not listening. And I had to teach them to be in, to have a contrasting opinion towards me, and let's say that in the room. And I remember very well being at the bottom of the U here. We knew exactly what we wanted, but I didn't have any solution. For a few weeks, I did not do anything. Some colleagues told me later that they got worried. What's happening here? Then I sent out an email to my suppliers. This is my dream. This is what I want. He was in. One company called from Germany, Eastern Germany, former Eastern Germany, have both thought, sie müssen kommen. It so happens that my partner is German and I speak German. And I went there. And they actually had a solution, but that they had been operating that in a different market for the pharmaceutical industry. And it looks like this. It's a cooling machine that will fit on a Euro pallet or on the table over there. And it will cool a small supermarket. And if I put two of them, then I have my redundancy. And if I make it plug, I put plugs on the side, then I can just exchange it. If it's broken, I will just exchange it. I don't need to do any maintenance in the shop. So this is the solution that we have been implementing since then. I think we have 140 of these in the field at this moment. Then, I'm sure you're all aware of Spiral Dynamics. We had to communicate. Being this company, 30,000 people, I couldn't talk to everyone. So I had to communicate through brochures and website. So we created a message for every single value meme to be sure we covered everyone. But of course, my marketing department, being very postmodern, loved to share what it was doing for the planet. But my technicians, they don't care. So I have to have a different message for them. I based that on the work from Barrett Brown, who wrote a wonderful article some 15 years ago, in which he has a table how to communicate to different value memes. This article is in English, and I had the table translated into Dutch, and we then actually apply this table as a tool to see are we actually covering all the value memes. So this is what we did. Some brochures are in Dutch, some is in English. We started communicating. We started talking to authorities, all of that. Somebody asked me yesterday, can you say a little bit more about the open participatory organization? Because we're here in the Teal Track. And what I hear in the Teal Track, as far as I've understood it so far, is that we are designing a Teal organization from the outside. What I've been sharing so far is that I've been doing things from the inside. I'm using my knowledge from the inside to then inspire my colleagues, hey, we could do this in a different way. So the team that I work in is actually Teal. It looks a little bit chaotic. You know, we sit all in the same room. There's no clear lineup from who has to do what. And depending on who's busy or not, we pick up those things that are most important. My management, my director, has a problem with that because he can't follow. Because the structures in the company are still very blue. But okay, that's what it is. I say to my colleagues, as long as we have enough impact, which we have, they'll let us do. And this is actually the case. Only last week, I took my youngest colleague to go to our CEO, and we had together found out how to save 35 million euros. And I had my younger colleague share that to the CEO. And then he listened and he said, let's do it. And it was actually coming from a complexity thinking. We had seen the opportunity, and the opportunity came. It's too difficult to explain right now, but it really is the point is that we can really be self-organized and see the opportunities and then share that. So the Open Participatory Organization has core performance value zones. My card says project engineer. That's a core performance value zone to create value there. But I also showed you my communications. That's a different core performance value zone. Organizational change, that's another core performance value zone. And it's in our mind, it's in my mind, if I believe that I can do it or not. And it's really here that I need to start. So, Benito Roy, what he says is, recognize that you have core performance value zones, and so look where you can actually have it make a difference. And then, in the team, start talking about what is important for you. I'll be on time. And this model says, basically, you need to talk about what comes from the outside. Input from the consumer, laws changing. And look at what are your standard operations. We use some chemical refrigerants. Can we maybe change something? Can we renew? Or we can make the shop a little nicer. We can do the first prototype cooling machine that I showed you. That's not a system change. Or we can go up. If that's not the solution, we need to go up and reinvent what we're doing. So that's what we did. But then, and this also, I want to share this with you in the Teal Track, if you are reinventing something, if you are reinventing an organization, what happens if I state a new intention in my personal life? Everything comes up that is not coherent with that new reality that I want to create. And what happened when we went from the top to the bottom, we brought our new reinvention into the organization. Oh my God. Lots of stuff came up. There were problems at the accounting department. They misprocessed bills. Lots of people didn't understand what was happening. They had to change their procedures. So you need to be aware of that. So if you're reinventing, you need to be really aware that lots of these things will come up. This is my last slide. Since about a year, I'm aware of the model of Dave Snowden. Kinefin, he calls it. It's a Welsh word. You can find lots of information on the internet. There's a very good article in the Harvard Business Review, A Leader's Framework for Decision Making. What does it say? It says, most people work in simple. I can categorize and I can respond. Or maybe things are more complicated, and I can have a good practice, but I'll need experts for that. Or things become complex. That's what we are talking about here today. When things are complex, I cannot predict. Complexity is non-linear. But I can tell you a story afterwards about what happened. Or things can be chaotic. And mind you, if things get categorized in the wrong category, you'll end up here. That happens a lot. Actually, things are complex, but they get categorized in the simple category. They are here. September last year, our supplier said of a component which was crucial, I cannot supply that the day before delivery. And about 10 shops could not be opened without this component. We were here in total chaos. Absolute total chaos. And after 2 days of stress, I said to my manager, we cannot go on like this. We have to calm ourselves, because I asked him, how are you? He said, I slept badly. Well, I said, me too, but we can't do that for the next 10 weeks. So we have to calm ourselves and operate from here. What's happening? And then respond. And we solved it. A few days later, we saw how to solve it. So we came from complex to complicated. We saw, this is how we can do it. So this is my job. I can say I'm an engineer, but my job really is to bring chaotic situations back to complex, back to complicated, and then back to simple. That's what I would like to share with you today. If you have any questions, let me know. Thank you.